know from past experiences, they will stop at nothing unless they are stopped or they achieve their aims. I don't think they will achieve their aims, as has been the case in the past, but again, they will take this as far as they feel necessary to take it, unless and until they are stopped by Iranian authorities.
Well, Jesse, it's not new nor surprising to actually see how Western mainstream media is taking advantage of the recent situation in Iran, claiming all sorts of humanitarian violations while they persecute their own people at home against free speech, to say the least, and while they take part in normalizing the West's brutal unilateral punitive measures against Iran and against other countries as well. And they do that without even flinching. They don't care. But what I want to know is, are there any real ripples inside the U.S. Society, at the public level, I mean, concerning this new wave of attack against Iran? Are the public really believing what their regime is trying to portray of the Iranian state?
I'm sad to say that at the public level here in the U.S., it's barely making an impact, if any impact at all. Most people are not aware of what's happening in Iran right now. And if they are, they're not paying attention very closely to it outside of what's being spewed by the likes of the corporate media, likes of CNN and Fox News, which has been ad nauseum to suggest, to declare that the Iranian state is carrying out violence against its citizens, that the Iranian state murdered the young woman in question when there's clear evidence that that is not what happened. The situation in Europe as opposed to the U.S. there seems to be a bit more awareness. There seems to be more propaganda in public and a public that is willing to fall for the propaganda. But here in the U.S., it comes primarily through corporate media, and people, if they care at all, pay attention just to what is told to them by corporate media and do no more research than
that. How do people like you, Jesse, get to know what is going on, and where do you get your news from?
Well, speaking for myself, I go to Iranian sources, I go to Press TV, of course, and I go to various independent media sources that actually are paying attention to what's happening in Iran and paying attention to it in a way that is not just regurgitating state propaganda. That said, it's still difficult to get an exact picture as to what's going on, but if you pay attention to corporate media, you're getting a very distorted, I would say completely inaccurate picture of what's going on.
What we saw and we are still seeing in Iran at maybe a lower pace than what happened during the past few days is a page from the Color Revolution Manual 101 that we have seen for the past at least 15 years, from riots to violence against security personnel to killing civilians and claiming that the authorities actually did it. This is exactly what we saw in Daraa in Syria in 2011, and before that in Ukraine and in Georgia. But with all that is going on right now with the world, and we are literally two steps behind World War III. What good does the U.S. really think it can get from instigating such an unrest, knowing that Iran is honestly is not Syria?
I don't know. Iran, the U.S. is certainly playing with fire with regard to Iran. It's not in an economic position to be waging such warfare, really, against Iran, economic warfare and regime change warfare. And perhaps this is at the behest of Israel. We certainly need to ask that question. And we need to ask to what extent the EU and UK are involved in this. It's very, very suspicious that this comes right after Iran was formally welcomed into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and it comes at a time when the president of Iran is speaking for the UN General Assembly. Certainly, Iran is making moves on the world stage to try to benefit itself. And since the revolution in 1979, the U.S. and the broader West has stood completely against any sort of self-determination on the part of Iran. So it seems to me that what the U.S. is trying to do here is what it's always been trying to do, though it's certainly upped the game. It's using more intense tactics than it has in the past, but it seems unlikely to succeed because Iran knows how to deal with this sort of chaos, this provocation, but time will tell. Time will
definitely
certainly tell.
They have been through this before, but they were able to bypass all of the attempts by the U.S. to wreak havoc and disturb the security in Tehran and elsewhere, in other provinces as well in Iran. Thank you very much, Jesse Zurwal, writer, editor, researcher, and producer and host at TNT Radio, for being with us and for your contribution. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will talk about something that the mainstream media did not mention. They ignored the U.S. occupation's killing of a young Iraqi teenager.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Now, in Iraq, a teenage girl named Zainab Isam Al-Khaz'ali was killed because of a stray bullet from an American occupation base situated inside Baghdad's international airport. It's not enough that the Americans are illegally residing as a form of occupation inside the international airport of a supposedly sovereign state, yet they blatantly use live ammo while fully aware that the airport is encircled by civilian residential neighborhoods, leading to the murder of a young Iraqi teenager named Zainab Al-Khaz'ali. Iraqis are infuriated by the crime. They demanded their authorities to investigate the cowardly incident that affected all families in the village of Abu Alwan in the Abu Ghraib area amid a total media blackout. U.S. occupation kills Iraqi teenager in this following report.
The killing of the 15-year-old girl Zainab Isam Al-Khaz'ali in the Abu Ghraib area west of the capital Baghdad by an alleged stray bullet sparked a wave of anger on social media platforms in Iraq. Politicians and activists accused U.S. occupation forces of killing the girl while training in a nearby camp. The bullet ended the life of the young woman, Zainab, as a result of a gunshot wound that came from a military shooting range near the village of Bu Alwan in Abu Ghraib district. For its part, the Baghdad Operations Command decided to open an investigation into the death of the teenage girl. The Iraqi security media cell said in a statement that the competent authorities supervising the course of investigation will announce to public opinion its reasons and will take the necessary legal measures against anyone who is proven to be involved in this incident. Iraqi politicians and bloggers accused the U.S. occupation forces of killing Zainab, and one of the most prominent tweets on that matter was attributed to the Secretary General of Asaib Ahlul Haq, Qais Al-Khaz'ali, who demanded an immediate investigation into the killing of the girl. The hashtag America Killed Zainab became trending, and this came based on the testimony of the people of the region in a video clip circulating on social media platforms that the bullet came from a training camp inside Baghdad International Airport, in reference to the American Victoria occupation base located inside the airport. The martyrdom of the Iraqi girl Zainab, shot by the American occupation forces in Baghdad, does not seem to be passing unnoticed inside Iraq. The public are demanding government agencies investigate the cowardly, treacherous incident that affected Iraqi families in the village of Al Bu Alwan in the Abu Ghraib area. Meanwhile, Iraqis were not the slightest surprised that the Western mainstream media remained silent about this crime while it is dancing nonstop to the tune of regime change in Iran. Western and regional media hypocrisy does not surprise any of the natives of West Asia, those who are with one-eyed humanity. How many times have we seen them rising up for shenanigans under the pretext of human rights and keeping silent about the massacres of the occupation, be it the American or the Zionist occupation? The silence of the media, activists, and politicians who were tweeting round the clock attempting to incite civil war in Iran not so long ago are nothing less than partners in crime to the repetitive crimes of the American occupation, not only in Iraq, but across all the world.
To discuss this tragedy with us from Beirut is Julia Qasim, journalist and political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Julia. Now, if you want to know how Zainab died, by browsing the news, we will often read this specific piece of information. It says, a stray bullet ended the life of young Zainab as a result of a gunshot wound coming from a military shooting range near the village of Al-Bu'alwan. A gunshot wound originating from a military shooting range. This is what it said. This means that the killer is known or the suspect is well-defined, but the news is incomplete and is not clear from an editorial point of view, at least, to say. Military shooting range belonging to whom? Does a stray bullet, Julia, take responsibility instead of a shooter?
You answered the question yourself, Marwa. The military range shooting was, the language for that is intentionally obscured because it is a site of the U.S. occupation, which is illegally in Iraq, which is illegally established its presence in Iraq decades ago and refuses to leave despite the will of the Iraqis. So while the media can obfuscate the accountability and the responsibility by trying to claim that a stray bullet did not intentionally kill Zainab Aysam, it still is indicative when the mask of the language is uncovered that that the U.S. occupation is accountable for this action, just as it is accountable for the deaths of millions in Iraq. The language of collateral damage that was employed by the imperialist leadership that justified the war crimes that took place in Iraq also could have been obfuscated to signify that, oh, the deaths of millions of Iraqis and of countless civilians, children, women, did constitute a non-intentional attack. But nonetheless, it was the direct result of an illegal occupation that involved brutal force against a civilian population. And this is no different.
Well, so a 15-year-old Iraqi teenager, her name is Zainab Aysam Al-Khazali. She was killed by a stray bullet in her own father's field. Yet people might not have even heard of her name before now, before even watching this show right now, or the events that actually led to her murder, because international media, they did not only black out on the story, they were busy broadcasting regime change propaganda against the Islamic Republic of Iran. How do you assess the hypocrisy of the media, especially in a case like this one, a clear-cut case?
Right, and it's absolutely necessary that Zainab Aysam's name in her case is obscured, so that while the media is propagating the narrative of the evil Iranian regime that is just brutalizing women and is directly responsible for the death of Miss Amini, which anybody has access to the footage. It was widely broadcasted. It's available. It clearly shows that there was no evidence of beating. But that narrative had to take precedent in order to justify the imperialist feminist push to again demonize Iran and launch this narrative as in attempts to launch another soft war, color revolution campaign. And to have this occur simultaneously with the death of Zainab Aysam, it's not possible because people had to, the consent for imperialism had to be manufactured. So to have these stories heard and broadcasted simultaneously would present a contradiction in the imperialist narrative that would also, that would hold the U.S. accountable for its, for the death of Zainab Khalil, but at the same time, wants to hone in on focusing on holding manufacturing a narrative around the Iranian government of its supposed legitimacy and its brutality, particularly against women, which is a very, very common and recurring trope in U.S. propaganda and Western propaganda against Iran. And again, in one case, it was very obvious who were the culprits of the killing of Zainab Issam were. But in the second case, the putting the Iranian government to blame and the Iranian officer and manufacturing this narrative of brutality was construed. It was obviously a narrative pushed without an absence of evidence. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it was the case that she died in police custody or was affected by the stress due to her
chronic disease, she had chronic disease before.
Right. Right.
So that's basically the fingers of accusations are directed in Iraq against the occupation forces, the American occupation forces, unlike what they are propagating about Ms. Mahsa Amini in Tehran. But they did not provide a justification or an explanation for what they did to Zainab al-Khazali. Although Iraqi politicians and bloggers accused the American forces of killing Zainab, and they demanded an investigation of this murder that happened, but no country denounced. Nor was the voice of the United States of America heard, nor did the United Nations portray its concern that it usually portrays against anything that's going on in West Asia, or any of the Western countries even heard about Zainab. I know it's not a matter of geography here, rather of interest and of responsibility. But will Iraq be able to hold those responsible accountable to the murder, to the treacherous and coward crime that they committed against a young 15-year-old Iraqi teenager?
Right, and just to finish up the last point, the Iranian government is constantly demanded to hold itself accountable in the context of its constant demonization, despite actually an investigation being ordered by the president and the security carrying it out right away. In the case of Iraq, while there has been an investigation demanded, the U.S. first of all wants to maintain its impunity in its role in causing countless Iraqi deaths, including this one, which is no different. But the U.S.'s continued intervention into Iraq also keeps there from being a government that's able to hold it accountable. In 2019, the resistance forces in Iraq, which represented a significant segment of the elected body, we're trying to form and consolidate a government that would be able to hold the U.S. accountable and remove the U.S. Out of Iraq. But of course, the U.S. came in and incited a color revolution in Iraq that was designed to prevent that from happening. And we're seeing the effects of that right now, of how justice and accountability cannot be attained for Zainab Issa. The U.S. wants to retain its impunity in the countless deaths around the world, intentional deaths that it caused. And this is Amini's death is a convenient way for it to deflect responsibility and push a narrative that further obscures its role in actually imposing its occupation, its will, its hegemony around the world intentionally and through systematic violence and force.
But this is why we are here, mm-hmm. Julia. We are here to make the world listen and hear our voices and know that a young Iraqi girl named Zainab Issam al-Khazali, she was killed, brutally killed by a bullet from a military base, an illegal military base, inside of the sovereign Iraqi state and international airport. Julia Qasim, journalist and political commentator, I want to thank you very much for your contribution and for helping us raise the voices of those who are voiceless and who are oppressed because of the occupation and the presence of imperialist powers in our nations and killing us, the natives of West Asia. I want to thank you very much for being with us. Now, please stay tuned next week for more from the MidEast Stream. We'll be right back.
is Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Back to Reality, and thank you for joining us. So, I am Asma, your humble host. I am a student of English literature. And in here, I have with me two very dear guests, Zainab and Bita. Welcome.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's a really big pleasure for me to join you for this discussion. I am Bita, a medical student from Iran.
And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Zainab Sadat. I'm from Iran and I have my MINTFL teaching English as a foreign language. And it's my pleasure to be here today in this discussion.
Thank you very much, both of you. Thank you for joining us in today's episode. So there are many conditions in life in which I think that there's no way for me to cure from the breakage that have got into my heart. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I'm sure that it has happened to both of you as well, and to the audience, of course.
Definitely.
There are many times that we feel that we're overcome and it's finished.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough. And I cannot do anything for it. There's no way for me to cure the wounds that I have in my soul. And most of the time, I unfortunately have to confess that it seems like it's a right notion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want you to tell me that, do you believe in this notion that says that there is no cure for the wounds that you've got from your past?
It's not true. I do not agree, as always, I
think. Yes.
And the thing is, one thing that connects human beings together is the ability to feel pains.
Yeah.
We feel pain. And when you feel pain or sorrow or something, you will understand the other people that exactly feel the same way as you.
Yeah.
And this will make sympathy, empathy, anything this life that is needed for human beings. And the thing is, you are telling me that there is no cure for your wounds you have in the past. And this is not true, because we have a blessing from God that is forgetting.
Yeah. Some people are very difficult at forgetting.
I know. I'm not telling you that it's not difficult. I'm telling you that we have this blessing. And one of the cure, absolute cure for this problem is just letting it go and send it somewhere during your daily life. And when time goes, when time, passes,
you will see the magic of time.
Exactly. This is the magic of time that you will understand it. Okay, this is not that much important anymore to me.
Yeah.
Because I have many other problems.
So, Zainab, are you a good person in letting go?
You know, me personally, I did not experience a really, really difficult situation in my life yet. Some situation that would leave a wound in me.
So good for
but
you.
But I know
living in different
situations.
Life.
But the most difficult one, you know, again, one of my relatives, she lost her father when she was... Her father accompanied by two or three of her uncles car accident when she was a little girl. And then since she was the only child of her family, she kept on her life with her mother. And then she got married with a man who she loved and they lived happily
ever after.
And that was when, Asma, I want to say that was when after some years, her husband was diagnosed with a disease. And when the husband went to hospital and he went through a surgery and that was successful, but suddenly he faced a heart attack and he died. That was in that interval when her mother was diagnosed with cancer and she lost her mother too. And the interval between her husband's
is she alive
death,
right now?
Yes, you see, the interval between her husband's death and her mother's death was just 1 month at tops.
Oh.
And, all of us felt so sorrow and we were so sad. But
as
you said, the magic of time, you know, after 2 years, I think the incidents, they happened 2 years ago. And now I can see that she could handle that. And that's just a miracle. She has married another man. Interesting.
I want to tell you, this is not a miracle, first of all. She was really strong, you know, to overcome these all misery. And I think if I were, for example, in her place, I wouldn't overcome all of these miseries in my life. Yeah. The thing is, I think there are many tips that she used in this difficult role to overcome all of this. First of all, the thing is, she once experienced this difficult situation when she was a child, as you told me. And this shows us that after that situation, she used, you know, many correct methods to overcome that. That after a while, that she faced this situation again and again and again. Even at that time, she was again successful. And I think the thing is, she was really strong to control her mind. You have to try to control your mind in different situations. You cannot control life, but you can control your mind. You have to
trust me. Sometimes you even cannot control your
mind. I do agree with that point. But the thing is, sometimes you have to do it. There is no other way.
Just it depends on the idea. Just you mentioned the strength. You know, not all people are the same.
And a will to leave. You know, there are most of people that doesn't have any goal or something in their lives. They're like, okay, there is nothing more I can do with this life. I want to die. I have nothing
more. Yeah, they already are depressed.
But I think this girl that you mentioned was really strong because she had goals in her life.
And you know what, Bita? She was a religious woman.
She had a strong connection to Allah.
Yes, she submitted herself to Allah's will and wisdom.
And we do believe that when you have that link with Allah, He would help you
and
go
really,
through.
I really believe that her connection with Allah saved her life.
Yeah, that's very true.
I do agree. And I think this religious goals even that she has in her life to be a good one too.
And you're right about the life goals, but being religious was a great
help.
You know, accommodation for her.
Yes. So, Bita, is there anything that happened in your life that made you think that, okay, there's no cure for this?
Not that much big that I, for example, can tell
you. Worth mentioning.
But the thing is, we have, we had, all of us had some the same story
exactly,
in different ways.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I've lost many friends in my life. In my community.
Which is very sad.
Yeah. Not losing them for, I don't know, these kind of natural accident. I lost them because some, I don't know, feeling a position between us.
Oh, yeah.
And these emotional things happened between us.
Yeah.
I lost them. It was like, okay, who was the person who did something wrong? I was just always looking for the answer of this question.
Who was the wrongdoer?
Yeah, exactly. Who was the wrongdoer? If it was me, so I have to, you know, pay for that. But I couldn't find something special in our relations. After a while, I understood that sometimes for overcoming these kind of anger, sorrow for something that you lose, you have to have physical distance. Physical distance is a way that you can choose to overcome the sadness of losing someone.
You mean ignore the source of misery that you're suffering from?
I mean, for example, if you just, that person that you have some problem with is the one who is your near colleague or something, you have to have some physical distance. Go to somewhere else. Go, go work to another place or something. That, and this will help you to maintain your mind peace.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was the method I've used, and it was successful, I think. And I overcome the fear of, you know, lacking something. You know, because when you lose something, when you are in a bad situation, your defects, your weaknesses are somehow
what
bolder.
What did you tell yourself when you were talking to yourself, okay, do not be scared of losing other people?
It was like, it is life.
Yeah,
you know, the only
that's justifying.
Sentence, yeah, the only sentence.
You know,
that
Asma,
I could
and
tell myself.
There was nothing she could do in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bita referred it quite correctly that she referred to herself and searched for the source of problem within herself. And when she couldn't find nothing, she concluded that okay, the problem was not mine. Or maybe Bita, I don't know. Maybe you found something within yourself and tried to fix it, but the major problem was within the situation, within your friend, I don't know, within lots of other criteria. And that was the correct thing to do, I think.
To think. Mm-hmm. And then find out the source of problem and mm-hmm. then to solve it.
Mm-hmm. And as mother, there is another thing to overcome these wounds. And that is optimism in future.
Which is very difficult.
Which is difficult.
Definitely difficult.
Which is sometimes harmful, I think. Optimism.
Yeah, harmful. I do believe in that.
Because,
yes.
You know,
because then
in realism.
You would be disillusioned.
Exactly.
It would turn into an illusion. Okay, I would say that, yes, I'm going to have a brighter future. Tomorrow is going to be better than today. Then just like the example you mentioned, just like the girl you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So if she had told herself that tomorrow is going to be a better day, I would have a brighter future. And
that
she cannot
disaster.
Wait for that large scale of time. At the moment, she would have been disillusioned and depressed.
You know, I'm not talking about just being optimistic about future. And you must do things to make the situation better.
I guess moderation is the mm-hmm. the key point to
just
everything.
Keep being realistic,
I think. Yeah,
yeah. It's the best way.
Yeah, I do believe in realism. That
Me
is
too.
Going to help. But sometimes, actually, the reality is so much bitter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I know some people who have done something wrong in their life. For example, consider they've done some sins.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, they keep itching themselves and
self-blaming.
Self-blaming. And when I look at them, I just say that sometimes exonerating yourself from different sins that you've done, from different miseries that you've caused to other people, is going to help you feel better. I know it's very much difficult. Sometimes the amount of sorrow that you've caused to other people, that you've injected other people with, is going to be too much that you cannot overcome it. But once you've came to the point that you understood the wrong thing you have done, mm-hmm. and then you ask Allah for forgiveness, I guess He would forgive you.
Exactly. But the thing is, you know, Asma, I think you're being too realistic. Too realistic.
too much.
You know,
too much of that dangerous.
The thing is, sometimes you cannot do anything alone. And, you know, have a kind of good family, good person next to you that fill you up for these situations is necessary. For example, you told me that after the death of spouse, she went through another marriage and she was successful.
Yeah.
And I think this is another reason.
So you mean that we
team.
Can use the help of other people
exactly,
as well?
Exactly, in this road. And I think when you have another people next to you, you won't feel alone. Because when you are lonely, when you're in a lonely list, it's like a kind of dark room. You cannot see anything. You cannot decide correctly. And these feelings of anger, sorrowness, or anything will be stronger in you.
Yeah.
You flow around your body, around your soul, and sometimes you cannot control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So up until now, we came mm-hmm. into conclusion that miseries do happen in our life. We are human beings. We have a heart. We are a cauldron of different emotions, sometimes mixed emotions. And many times, there are some obstacles that will get into the way. Miseries would happen without you even predicting it. But still, we have been blessed with the bliss of forgetting. So they even say that insan, the word insan, comes from the root of forgetting. So we have been blessed with that blessing as well. But sometimes it turns out to be difficult, which you already said that, okay, we should come to conclusion that we have, at the very first point, we have to accept that something has happened to me. I need to help myself overcome it. And now I can use the help of other people. I can use the help of a therapist. I can help myself through the spiritual journeys that I'm going through. Having a link with Allah is going to help me. And plenty much more of these things. Do you still have things to share with the audience?
No, that's it. You know, I do agree with you. And the gist is just try to understand the way you are in it and decide to be the one you have to be. You can overcome everything because you are powerful. Believe in your power.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's the best sentence to wrap it up. You have the strength to overcome it. No matter how much breakage you have on your heart, Actually, it makes your heart more beautiful, because when it sings, it's going to be having some more beautiful of melodies. That's actually at least the thing that God would hear from your heart. The hearts that have been more miserable would sing more beautifully in the spiritual realm. So thank you, dear listeners. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
So none of what we're going to talk about is going to discount love of Ahlul Bayt. Okay? Sheer love of Ahlul Bayt. If someone only has that, nothing else. But the Imams themselves have spoken. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has spoken about love of Ahlul Bayt, what it's supposed to entail. And yes, this is cliche, maybe. Love is not just to love, it's more than that. But let's see what it's supposed to entail and what the rewards are for what we're supposed to look like as a result of the love that we have for Ahlul Bayt. This hadith is by Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, the famous companion of Rasulullah. He says, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ مَنْ رَزَقَهُ اللَّهُ حُبَّ الْأَئِمَّ مِنْ أَهْلِ بَيْتِي فَقَدْ أَصَابَ خَيْرَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. That the Prophet said, whoever has love of my Ahlul Bayt, the Imams of my Ahlul Bayt, this person, أَصَابَ, has hit the target when it comes to the khair and good of dunya and akhirah, both. And so the hadith goes on, the Prophet says, there are 10 things though, of the dunya that this person will get, And there are 10 things of the Akhirah that this person will get. Inshallah, we'll go through these tonight quickly with a little bit of commentary on each one. But I want you to pay attention here. As we start listening to what the Prophet has to say in this regard, all right, 10 things in dunya. Okay, what are those 10 things? Probably health, wealth, wife, life, husband, good husband, you know, the one that comes on a white horse that Allah sends from the sky, which never happens. Yes, marriage is all about getting along with each other. That white horse thing isn't going to happen, really. Anyway, all of these things, those are the things of the dunya, correct? So we're expecting something like this as a result of hubb of Ahlul Bayt. And then akhirah, of course, we know what that's all about, right? But now let's see the words of the Holy Prophet. The Prophet here seems like he is using the words he's using in a certain way. Because when we're expecting these benefits, dunyawi benefits, and we have a certain thing in mind, look at what he says. He begins, number one. Oh, and before he begins, he says, فَلَا يَشُكَّنَّ أَحَدٌ أَنَّهُ فِي الْجَنَّةِ. The person who has love of my Ahlul Bayt, there's no doubt that they're going to be in Jannah. All right. So how do we identify this individual? How can we tell if this individual... You're telling us there's going to be 10 indicators. All right, let's see who's wealthy, who's healthy, who's this, who's that. And we can be sure that they're going to be in Jannah. But he begins. He says, 10 of them in the dunya, 10 of them in the akhirah, as for those that are in the dunya. Number one, hub of my Ahlul Bayt is going to have the benefit of az-zuhd fi dunya. Wow. Love of Ahlul Bayt will entail the fact that I'm not too interested in this dunya. I will chase the dunya to the amount that I need. Because Allah said so. Ahlul Bayt said so. But look, brothers and sisters, when you love someone, but that person is not interested in somebody else, are you going to be interested in that somebody else? No. Yeah? Oh my God. This guy is the coolest guy in school. This guy doesn't like to hang out with those people. I want to be with this guy. Am I going to hang out with those people too? No. So it says here that this person that is in love with Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, the first thing is you start noticing in them what benefit? Wealth, health. You notice in them the fact that they aren't too interested. Yes, they will go after it because they have to an extent. But zuhd doesn't mean not possessing. What does zuhd mean? It means not being inclined towards something. And of course, let me open a parenthesis here. Sometimes some of us, we will kind of fool ourselves. We'll say, we'll have the best stuff that one can have. I feel like zuhd is me not being attached. But I can have, right? It's true. But brothers and sisters, when you're not interested in something, come on, like, it's not going to show too much. The opposite will not show too much either. Who are we kidding? But anyway, every person can judge themselves. The Quran says, بَلِ الْإِنسَانُ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ بَصِيرَةً وَلَوْ أَلْقَى مَعَذِيرَةً. That every person knows what's going on inside them. Even though they might make excuses, we all know what's going on in our hearts. Yes, there will be a Prophet Sulaiman who has everything you could ask for on the face of the earth. He is Zahid still. You'll have Ali ibn Abi Talib during his time before Khilafat. He has some possessions. After his Khilafat, almost nothing he possesses. We know this person is also Zahid. So yes, at the end of the day, Zuhd, I would say, is a state of mind. Attachment. There will be people who will have a lot more, and really they are Zahid still. And there will be people who have, as Imam Khomeini said, they'll have a little tasbih even, and they're so attached to that tasbih. Or a cloak that they're so attached to, and so on and so forth. So that state of mind. A person who is a lover of Ahlul Bayt sees what they're interested in, what they're in love with, and they are more inclined towards that. These individuals were inclined towards Akhirah more than anything else. All right, so that will equal Zuhd. Number one. Number two, Al-Hirsu ala al-Amal. Number two, they say Amir al-Mu'min alayhi salam, he was the hardest worker of his time. Ayatollah Makarim, he has done the math. He's done the math. When? In the 50s, I think it was, when last I checked. Right now we're in 2021. In the 50s, he had done the math and converted to a dollar amount or toman amount, whatever you want to use, currency. The wealth that Imam Ali was generating, all right? This is important. Sometimes you possess something. Sometimes you use it. Imam Ali is generating wealth for the Muslims, working hard. There's one story, I love this story. It says he came, his servant was there. This is like in the fields. He comes, he says, what do we have for food? He says, we have this for food. It's like some squash dish or something. Something made out of squash, kadu. The Imam, he says, all right, let's have that. He says, no, that's not befitting of the Khalifa. Imam is like, really? You're going to say that to me? Give me what we got. The Imam has a meal, puts his sleeves up, gets to work, starts digging, digging, digging. Comes out, he is drenched in sweat, goes back down, digging, digging, digging. They say Imam Ali jumps out all of a sudden. And then water gushes out. Yeah, he had hit water. Okay, back then having a well equaled kind of like having an oil mine field, whatever today. This is worth a lot of money. Back then, that was everything. This individual works hard, generates wealth for them. And then right away he says, this is for the fuqara of Medina. This is for the poor individuals of Medina. I am dedicating it to them. Now hear this, man. Hear this. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he writes, Ali ibn Abi Talib dedicates this to the fuqara of Medina so that on the day of judgment, his face is saved from the hellfire. SubhanAllah. What's he teaching us? With amal, he secures akhirah. Number two on the list here, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says, a person who loves Ahlul Bayt, he has al-hirsu ala al-amal. This person is obsessed with working. Not obsessed in a bad way, of course, although hirs does have negative connotations. But the Prophet here is illustrating a point to us that these people, for them, it's hard work, number one. And also, amal can refer to action versus just sitting there and thinking that I'm a holy person, but I don't do ibadah properly, I don't do other things properly. Yes. So number two, I love Ahlul Bayt. That's why I'm a love work, because they were hard workers themselves. I don't get it, brothers and sisters. I just don't get it. Alhamdulillah, I spent half my life in another third world country. All right. So for me, I saw the struggles of the people. When you come back, you see some people, they don't know what's going on other places. Bro, you're 25 years old. You're still playing video games 6 hours a day. When are you going to get married? When are you going to get a job? When are you going to get an education, a degree, whatever it is? I don't know. Do something. You do something, you'll get results. Al-hirsu ala al-amal. Some here, someone might say, oh, okay, so he's calling out video games. No, no, no. It's fine. That's fine. If you figured out other aspects of life, inshallah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim, Kareem, Azim, Alim, Halim, Hakim, Mateen. قيوم رؤوف صابر مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Defensive Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Finally, Iran accedes to the Shanghai Cooperation Council, SCO, as full member. It's part profit and part potential, as this Eurasian alliance that was forged in 2001 is still establishing new memberships and laying out the infrastructure to obtain its goals.
Our question is, what will be Iran's role in the SCO's achieving its goals, and what will permanent membership do for Iran? Well, the Transcontinental Political Security and Economic Alliance does comprise over 40% of the world's population and just under 30% of its GDP, gross domestic product. And Iran, a major supplier of fossil fuels, is placed strategically on the North-South Corridor and the East-West Corridor. Welcome to Iran Today with me, Leila Faramarzi. Now, Iran had applied for full membership 15 years ago, so why the upgrade from observer status now? The JCPOA and Iran seemingly prioritizing the West in its foreign policy decisions seems to have been a problem. Although the two greatest powers on the SCO, that's Russia and China, are also party to the JCPOA. Anyhow, now with the JCPOA or nuclear deal struggling to survive and Iran looking to the East and neighborly relations for leverage and balance, it has qualified as a suitable candidate for SCO permanent membership. Also, Russia and China are at odds with America now. The Russia-Ukraine war is a rift between Russia and the West in total. And China is also sanctioned by the U.S., the U.S., which interferes in overseas regions, creating turmoil. So now the East is closing ranks in securing its own interests. We got to have a chat with the Foreign Ministry spokesman, Mr. Kanani, busy as he is with the many alliances Iran has been forging or amending. That was at the ministry's exquisite conference hall with mirror and plasterwork.
We should not forget that at any rate, we are witnessing regional alliances that are faced against globalist policies. Fortunately, this organization can challenge the unilateral policies of the United States. Member states are generally aligned with the same policies, including China and Russia. In this policy, we see similarities between the Islamic Republic of Iran and significant members of the organization, including China. Therefore, membership in the SCO can be a mutual bilateral opportunity both for the Islamic Republic and the SCO as an international organization observing regional politics.
Not to forget, Iran's permanent membership, which was confirmed at the 22nd SCO summit in Uzbekistan, is to be finalized in April of 2023. Now, the SCO doesn't want trouble, and while Iran's membership can neutralize the adverse effects of sanctions partially, I wondered whether sanctions prevailing might reverse Iran's status in the club by that time. For the time being, full membership will give this country some leverage and clout in ongoing Vienna talks for a more favorable JCPOA in the re-signing. Mr. Vafoi is a university professor, informed, meticulous and accurate in studying and teaching, all to do with Iran-Asia relations.
The imposition of sanctions does not hinder the organization's progress at all. In fact, it can neutralize some of its adverse effects. The reason is multilateralism, which is the motto of the organization, and the capabilities of its member states. When countries like India, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Pakistan are showing interest in joining the organization, it shows that the organization holds the potential to establish anti-sanctions measures.
The alliance has an interesting composition. It was formed 21 years ago by Russia, China, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan at a summit held in Shanghai. All our regional member states are WTO, World Trade Organization members, except for Uzbekistan. The SCO has four nuclear powers for member, and two greatest fossil fuel powers, Russia and Iran, and two great energy consumers, India and China, to buy from them. Now that they are all equal SCO partners, they can equally establish cooperation for energy transactions.
The organization is a suitable bed for multilateral as well as bilateral transactions and cooperation, because primarily it's not a trade organization. But energy security is of paramount importance for these countries, which are major providers or producers of energy. And this is where Iran's importance is highlighted for energy and security.
The SCO is a very large international collective that creates mutual opportunities for the Islamic Republic and the member states. Well, the collective of the SCO member states add up to more than 25% of the gross domestic production of the entire world. Roughly 40% of the population belong to the SCO member states. Therefore, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is a substantial economic opportunity and is a vast market. In the framework of the SCO membership, there will naturally be ample opportunities for its member states, including the IRI. Especially in the context of regionalist and eastward policies of the Islamic Republic, the SCO is a very good opportunity to employ SCO capacities in line with its own interests and benefit, despite Iran-West relations.
Trade can be furthered and secured with transit and energy security heightened as a consequence of this alliance that creates multilateralism in the world, hence breaking a US hegemony and unilateralism. Even the issue of security is not dryly about guarding oil wells at gunpoint. SCO meetings have heard a range of issues discussed. The issue of food security, for one, has been emphasized. President Raisi himself emphasized issues such as health and the use of Iran's capabilities in that field, including the export of medical equipment and biotechnological drugs, as well as providing health tourism services to SCO member states by this country.
Given the main goal of the SCO is security, how do you see Iran's membership helping regional security?
Security is one of the chief concerns of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Unfortunately, our region is generally home to many tensions and challenges. We witness new crises rise and old ones rekindled. The Islamic Republic has shown that it holds effective and serious potential in helping solve regional conflicts and strengthening political proceedings to deal with regional challenges.
Talking of trade, there are subordinate organizations to the SCO which might help boost member states' economy, such as the Business Council, Interbanking Association, or Energy Club. The SCO Business Council, founded in 2006, is a non-governmental body which brings together the most influential members of the business communities of member countries. It aims to boost economic cooperation in the framework of the organization. It gives expert assessments on the involvement of members of business communities of the SCO member states in trade, economic and investment interaction, again in the framework of the organization.
For example, Central Asian countries and China have defined well-established economic relations, but these relations require infrastructure. The member states will be willing to work in the framework I mentioned, both bilateral and multilateral. But if we have an issue with an SCO member, for example, and we expect multilateral relations to work, we'll hit a dead end.
In 2005, SCO heads of the Government Council decided to establish the SCO Interbank Consortium, what would translate as Interbanking Association in Persian. That was mainly to set up a mechanism of funding and banking services for investment projects supported by the governments of the SCO member states. Now, specifically for energy cooperation between members, the SCO Energy Club was founded in 2013. And since, apart from multilateral arrangements, members have also engaged in bilateral agreements in the energy sector. China and Russia have been building a natural gas pipeline since 2015, a pipeline under 3,400 kilometers long. That's the largest energy cooperation between the two countries. CGTN, Chinese television, put it in good terms. The SCO has been an incubator for regional synergy in the field of energy. Mr. Sonny is an enterprising youth who shared his experience and insight with us. He is deputy chair of the Iran-Uzbekistan Joint Chamber of Commerce, with a healthy interest in introducing Uzbek opportunities.
According to the structure in the SCO, below the heads of states and ministers of foreign affairs, the secretariat is performing the activities. The secretariat is formed of permanent entities such as a consortium monitoring banking and financial transactions. This consortium is made up of a few banks that are from the SCO member states. One of the new plans